Welcome to the Long Thread Podcast, about spinning, stitching, and weaving by hand. The podcast is presented by Long Thread Media, publishers of Handwoven, Piecework, Spinoff, and Little Looms magazines. Find us online at longthreadmedia.com. I'm your host, co-founder Anne Merrow. This season is sponsored by Webbs. Webbs, America's yarn store, is your source for everything you need for your next weaving project. Webbs carries a wide selection of yarns, looms, tools, and accessories, and you can save up to 25% every day with the Webbs discount. Visit yarn.com for more info. I'm here with Amy McKnight, who's a fiber artist and creative weaving teacher. Welcome.
Thank you, Anne. I'm so glad I could be here with you.
So you're there in your studio with all kinds of different weaving samples on the wall. You do really extraordinary work with pretty simple looms.
Yeah, I like to work with, I started out working with just basic frame looms when I was a little kid. And I guess I never really, I'm doing the thing, the scare quotes with my fingers. I never really graduated. I didn't even know there was anything else out there, to be honest with you. I've had the opportunity to listen to different podcasts about fiber artists, and the running theme, it seems, with a lot of people is having a fine arts background. They've gone to school for fiber arts. Oh my goodness, if I knew that that was an option to go to school for fiber arts and learn to weave, my goodness, the world would be a different place. My world would be a different place. But no, I started weaving as a kid, in addition to, of course, crochet, needlepoint, and all those other things. My mother was older when she had me, so my grandmother was older. And because of the fact that I was a hyperactive child, my grandmother was of the mindset, get a book and go sit down and do something. And so she had a lot of crafting books, and she gave them to me. And from a young age, I learned to read patterns for crochet and needlepoint and all the other stuff. But I always liked weaving. And I can't remember exactly when I found it. I know it had to have been sometime in, you know, elementary school, but I found like basic weaving, and I couldn't get enough of it, but I didn't find too much more so than like the simple cardboard weaving or weaving on straws or something of that nature. So that's pretty much what I did up until a few years ago. So that's been my world for most of my life.
So the funny thing is that you said you haven't really graduated in a way, but you have graduated in technique, the kind of techniques you're bringing into small looms.
Yeah, I think that I guess that's the cool thing about not having any preconceived ideas about what's possible. I think that if I would have had the background, that would have been really cool to have, of having gone to school and spent a lot of time studying the different theories and working on floor looms and whatever, I would not come to small looms with this kind of inquisitiveness or a feeling of, oh, wow, we can do whatever, you know, I can take this technique from this type of weaving and bring it over here to this type of weaving. We can mix and match concepts because no one told me that you're not supposed to do it. So I don't know what I'm not supposed to do. So I just kind of do things.
So what would you say is your favorite kind of weaving to do right now?
That's kind of hard. Right now, I'm actually gearing up to teach my first in-person band weaving class since COVID. And so I've been doing a lot of band weaving. I like warp face weaving for the fact that, you know, once you get the warp on there, you're pretty much just going back and forth. I like plain weave, warp face weaving. I don't do pickup or any of the fancy stuff. I just like back and forth and seeing the pattern unfold in the warp. So I really enjoy that. I like the process of it, but I also like the fact that it's really accessible to people. For the class, we're only going to be using a 4-inch rigid heddle, a band shuttle, and then I bought, you know, the Jurgensen's clamps from Lowe's. And so and I have the warps, everything made up, and the clips and everything. So, you know, I like that because it allows people to try out something in a way that's actual, that can be built upon, you know, because they can take that so many different ways. They could, you know, go rigid heddle, they could go inkle loom, they could do so many things with it. But I'm liking the thought, this will be the first time I've taught it, of introducing people to a method of weaving that is a real deal method of weaving, has a lot of history behind it, And something that, you know, if they decide they want to, they can take the kit home and weave some more on their own. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm going to be gearing up for next month in my community. I'm going to be doing some weaving of aprons and doing some weaving in that respect. So we're going to be looking at aprons and the different ways to do it and such of that nature. So I'll be back on my bigger rigid heddle loom. So that's kind of a stretch going from band weaving to weaving fine cloth on my 24-inch Ashford. So I guess I kind of span the gamut generally. And I'll be doing bands for the apron. So I like incorporating the different types of weaving because I think that, you know, it seems sometimes it looks as if we're really segmented off. You have potholder loom weaver groups over here and Inca loom weaver groups over here. And you got your floor loomers over there. Great big old rigid heddle weaving group. But we can bring it all together. And that's kind of sort of what I like to do. And what I try to do is bring it all together.
One of the first times that I was looking at your Instagram feed, you know, speaking of teaching and going out into the community, I noticed it was almost like you were doing a book tour with looms. You were going to a variety of, it was like a series of libraries.
Yeah.
Well, how did that come about?
Hey, maybe I'm hoping into existence. One of these days, I hope to write a book about what, who knows, but I think that would be cool. I'm a real bookworm. But no, the cool thing was in my day job, we own a computer repair and sales business. And one of our clients had come in to get some work done. And I think he saw a loom in the background because I bring my looms with me. I generally am not too far away from a loom at any given point in time, even when I'm at work. And this was before COVID, of course, when people could actually come into businesses and see each other. But he saw the loom and he asked me about it. And somehow we got to talking. I started telling him about my vision of doing something in the community, like to bring people together. It was called the Fabric of the Community. And he said, you know, the best way for you to do that would be to go to the libraries because they're in each of the different cities in Davidson County. So there are five libraries pretty much in each of the major cities in this county. And he's like, I know such and such. Here's her number. Call her. Tell her I told you to call her and she'll get that set up. And pretty much it was like that. I called the lady and she said, you know, oh, yeah, this is an amazing idea. She reached out to all the libraries. It was kind of open to them whether or not they wanted to participate or not. But pretty much every single one participated. I think the circuit was like a couple 100 miles or so, just hitting all the different libraries going around. It was wild because I went to all the libraries, delivered samples so that they would be able to show the people what was going to happen. And then my husband pretty much shuttled me around every Friday because that was the only time I had time to do it. And it was really amazing. You know, we had people from super little people, like little kids, to older people that came together. And I had all these shuttles warped up and they just were able just to weave and try out rigid heddle looms. And yeah, it was really amazing experience.
Actually, around that time, I noticed that, you know, you had this sort of twist on pin loom weaving, which was a push pin loom.
Yes, yes, yes. That, you see, it's me trying. It's like I reach back, I reach forward. So it was actually a few months after. It was right before COVID hit. I released it on Martin Luther King's birthday, 2020, right before the craziness. And I think it was kind of like my ode to little looms, my ode to my beginnings. I should have mentioned potholder looms. That is, my grandmother had a lot of potholder looms. She taught Vacation Bible School. She was a daycare teacher. So of course she had a ton of potholder looms. And I did a lot on potholder looms. And it was way back then before I even realized that it was a thing because I ran out of those loops like really well into my exploration of potholder weaving. And I started using yarn to weave on the potholder looms. And so I really enjoyed doing that. And then at some point, I can't remember when, I got introduced to pin looms. And I saw, you know, I thought that was kind of cool because you lay down the three layers, then you weave the last layer. That's pretty neat. And then I went down the rabbit hole of pin looms to understand how does the math of that works? How would I make a big pin loom? How would I make a rectangle or a triangle or whatever? How does this work? And so I went down that rabbit hole. And then I got introduced somewhere along the way to a style of weaving that is really popular in South America, where they weave on the bias and they weave diagonally with a continuous strand. And so this kept mulling around in my head, you know, potholder weaving, pin loom weaving, continuous strand weaving. How can we mix these all together so that people can be able to explore all of these things on one loom? And after sitting down and just playing with the math for a little while, I realized the important one was the pin loom weaving, because there's actually, you have to have it set out in a certain formation in order for you to be able to have, you know, warp it in a certain way. And then at the end, be able to weave all the layers and you pop it off and you don't have any extra loops left over. And so once I got that part figured out, it was really simple to figure out how to do the other two types of weaving. And so the other thing was, is that, you know, I really wanted to do something that made weaving accessible to more people. And so I figured, you know, let's figure out a way to make a loom. And that's when I put it all together and just came up with this basic push pin loom that's made out of office supplies that anyone could make. And the only thing that I can say I kicked myself that I, you know, I kicked myself for many things in 2020, but, you know, the one of the bigger things that I kicked myself for is that when COVID hit, I didn't really know what to do. And it took me a while to get out of, to figure it out, because this wasn't my job. You know, my day job was kind of sort of an essential type worker, because we were in IT. We stayed open through the whole of COVID, and it was super stressful. And so I really couldn't even think about weaving. I was, for those first couple of weeks, months, I was just worried about us getting sick, you know, and making sure the computers were clean that came in. So I couldn't even think for a good part of it. But despite that, over 1,500 people, I think, have downloaded the pattern for the Common Thread loom. And so people were using it, people were doing it. I had wanted to do patterns and show people how to do all sorts of stuff. And I hope to do that at some point in the future. But yeah, COVID kind of derailed my plans for that. But the Common Thread loom is something that I wanted to give to the world, the weaving world, to allow the average person to enjoy, explore the joys of weaving, and then be able to decide, you know, maybe I might want to go more with it. And there's always the rigid heddle and all the other ones, but that's why I did that.
You know, it's kind of poignant when you talk about that, because at a time when, you know, you had put this out into the world, and at a time when it wasn't something you were reaching for, other people who have been looking for solace are coming to weaving, and they were able to come and find this gift that you'd given right before that. So you've created this loom out of very simple tools, but looking around your studio, I can see that it's not that you are afraid of having weaving tools. You have a little herd there.
I have. And this is after buying and selling and buying and selling as much as I have in here. It was kind of sad. Right before COVID hit, I had just started. So after I came off of my community weaving, that kind of, people kept asking me, do you teach classes? You know, what are you doing? I'd like to do more of this. How can I do this with you more? And I started thinking about how that would look. And it was kind of interesting. My mind, as you can probably imagine, works kind of strange in some ways. And I thought, you know, I want to teach classes, but I don't want to teach classes, if that makes any sense. I want to give people an experience. I want them to experience what we experienced during this time of community weaving. I want people to be able to come, but only not just come and weave and just weave a little bit, but be able to take something home. And so when I was looking into what a lot of weavers did for weaving classes, I saw that they would take people through the basics from soup to nuts. They would start them out warping that thing, and they would have them thread and everything. They pick their colors and everything like that. And it could take days. And I'm thinking, I don't know if I don't have time for that. I work a day job, so I don't have days to do that. And my weekends are precious to me. I wanted to figure out a way to do this that could be something that would bring me joy, but also would be something that people would want to pay to come to and could grow organically. And so I started doing weaving events as opposed to weaving classes, where I prepared looms. I would warp the loom. I would put on enough warp that you could get about three or four scarves out of the warp. And then I would put like, actually you got more than that, because I put 9 yards on each of the looms. So I would put 9 yards of warp on each of the looms. So you could get a, depending on how quickly the person wove, they could do things. And I would start their weaving. They would pick their colorway and they would pick their add-ins and little, you know, different thrums. I would have thrums. I would have, you know, fluff. I would have different colors that complemented the colorways that they were using, because I used commercial yarn for the weft and the warp was black. And so I would go, and in about 2.5 to 3 hours, people who had never woven before would come away with a scarf. I try to provide more of an experience as opposed to trying to formally teach. I enjoy teaching. I actually started my degree in college in elementary education. I realized, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy that too much. And so I changed to English. But all throughout my life, I've had the opportunity to teach more adults. I've taught kids some, but mostly adult learners. And I enjoy helping adults learn things as adults, because it's kind of fun. You know, sometimes, you know, we don't always take the time. Not everyone is able to do continuing education. And I feel like, you know, sharing arts and crafts and such with people is a pretty amazing thing. And so like the experience that we'll have on Sunday, you know, the loom is already going to be warped up. I'll have the majority of the warps are going to be rainbow. So, you know, something fun for people to weave. I'll have some other, you know, thrown in so people have a little bit of choice if they come early. But everybody else is going to weave rainbows. But I will have started the warp. I will have it ready for them. You know, they're going to have to tie it onto themselves and tie it onto the clamp. But I want people to experience it, because I feel like if you experience weaving at a high note, it'll get you through the other stuff. And I find that a lot of times with the teaching that I had seen, hadn't really experienced any of it because I don't live in an area where there are a lot of weavers. That's not true. I am in the textile area here in North Carolina, but I don't know any other rigid heddle weavers that I didn't personally teach how to be rigid heddle weavers here in this area. So from what I've seen online, from when I was reading other teachers' websites, I'm like, I personally don't want to go and sit for 2 days and do this. I want to get, I like pretty, not really instant gratification because I'm a weaver, but I like to do things and I like to see something happen. Here's the crazy thing. When I was doing the fabric of the community, I had, you know, all these different shuttles. And the thing that you would think is that people would just want to weave, you know, solid colors. And then I had some wacky shuttles that had different lengths of different colors and textures. And people wanted to weave those. They wanted to see the textures change. They wanted to see the colors change. And so, you know, they would sit and weave, and the process of just throwing the shuttle back and forth was enough for them. But they did also want to have some type of visual of the colors changing, of something happening. And then, you know, it's nice to be able to see something. You do a little pull loops or do some skipping or whatever. And we would do those type of things when we were doing that community thing. And I brought those same things into my weaving events that are sort of classes, but not really. I taught them the basics. I gave them, set them off to the races. And it was amazing to see, you know, some people, their personalities would totally come out. Some people just wanted to have fun. Their salvages were crazy. And I was like, go with it. You know, we're having fun tonight. And some people wanted the perfect salvage. And you know what? I showed them how to do the weaver's angle so they got their clean salvages. But it was more, I was not imposing my view as to what they should create on them. And I had several people afterward want to buy looms from me because of the experience of weaving, you know, and those people were more motivated to learn the basics because of the fact that they had experienced the fulfillment of the process of weaving and creating a finished product. And so, you know, that they ate them, they took the medicine with honey to make it easier for them to do the other part, which is not necessarily the fun part, although I do enjoy warping. I'm a weird one that doesn't mind warping. And I try to encourage people to see the joys of warping, because that's just the other half of the weaving. You got to be warped to weave, as Liz Gibson says.
But it's true that, you know, warping is not a hobby. So
no.
You know, and sometimes there are people who work on very complex looms who find that conceiving the project and warping it is the fun part, and the weaving isn't so fun. But I've talked to the Susan Horton, the editor of Handwoven, and she said, I just really love the feeling of throwing the shuttle, beating the cloth, throwing the shuttle in that rhythm.
Exactly. And there are a lot of people who like that.
And so once people have gotten the experience, do you find that a lot of them want to go on and learn how to actually warp themselves?
To be honest, no. I would say that I was getting booked, and I was having people that came back repeatedly. I had one lady that came back for 3 classes, you know, or 3 events. And I would have these events at restaurants. I'd have them in, I think I had one in like a icicle cream, whatever, parlor. It was a really fun place, and at people's houses, of course, and whatnot. And so it was as much about the weaving as it was about the camaraderie, about having a nice night out. I took cues from paint nights. I took cues from like the paint party ethos when I was conceiving how to do it. I approached the restaurants, you know, selling it as an opportunity for them to bring guests into their restaurants on a slow night, and they were all for it. And, you know, it was a really nice way for ladies to have a night out and friends to get together. But, and so I think that just like with a paint party, you know, you go to your paint and sip place, wherever they have the canvas set up, they've got your paint set out, your water, you go, you do, you leave with a finished product, and it's something that you can do again. So I wouldn't say that this made a ton of people want to purchase looms, but I had a ton of repeat people that wanted to do it again. And I think that that's good too, because I sometimes feel like, you know, we want to push people to do whatever. And I know that what I was doing was kind of unique, and people don't get that opportunity all the time. So they have to kind of buy before they try. And whereas I allow people to try before they bought, which, you know, helped with the actual mental buy-in of, I could get this loom. Maybe I can make a bunch of scarves. This is a whole lot faster than knitting and crocheting. I can't knit a scarf in 3 hours. So this is pretty cool. I might want to get one of these. And so that's kind of sort of how it worked with that.
So you have a real interest in creative weaving. You were talking about, you know, switching wefts and pulling up loops and all kinds of different, I think creativity is an important part of your work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I believe in learning the rules well so that you can break them with intention. So I, you know, when I'm starting out and I'm showing people, just have fun at the event or whatever, I just let them have fun. You know, I tell them the basics, whatever. But when I'm trying to explain how something is done, I try to tell people as best as I know as a self-taught weaver, the better practices or the best practices or whatever. I mean, I don't know all the best ones, but I know the better ones. Because I believe that you have to know how to, you know, put a decent warp on. You need to have proper tension. You need to know what will happen if you do too many skips. You need to know how that's going to wash if you put too much big fluffy yarn in there. And if it's wool, you may not get what you think you're going to get when you throw that thing in the wash. So, you know, you need to know the rules, but you can break the rules. And I guess for me, I'm trying to put out into the world what I didn't see when I was coming into this world, and not necessarily the frame loom or my pin loom weaving, but the rigid heddle world seemed pretty rigid to me. The weaving world was very, you know, chop, chop, chop. Things have to be done this way. If you don't, you know, something bad's going to happen. I'm like, no, it's not. You know, there's been creative crocheters and knitters and whatnot. I mean, it's my loom. If I want to, you know, do something crazy, if I want to burn it in my backyard, it's mine. I bought it. So how are you going to tell me what I'm going to do to it? And so I kind of bring that to the way I share and the way I approach weaving for myself personally and how I share with others. You know, a lot of the things I do and have done do take a high degree of, you know, understanding of technical practices, like weaving multi-shaft pieces on a rigid head of loom is something that you have to understand technique. You have to understand how things work and the mechanics and what's happening. But in the same way, you don't have to weave the same thing on that warp. Whether you have twill, you can weave twill or you can have fun as you weave whatever you want to weave on your straight draw threading. But yeah, you know, I guess, yes, creativity is very important to me. To me, that's a long answer. And I like to be creative and encourage other people to explore their own creativity.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because typically when people think about creativity and putting in texture and mixing warps and wefts, it doesn't always bring to mind something I saw on your site that I loved, which was what looked like a broken twill or a bird's eye twill with bright blue and bright pink clasped weft in the middle of it. So, you know, and on a rigid heddle loom, so you were using three different heddles. So this is creativity, but it's not careless creativity.
No. I mean, the thing is, it's fun for someone who's a non-weaver. It's fun to look at. They can appreciate that. It's like, ooh, that's pretty. For someone who's a rigid heddle weaver, they're like, what in the world did you just do? And for a floor loom weaver, they're like, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be able to do that, you know? And so it makes me smile all the way around because everyone is happy. Everyone is enjoying it. But yeah, there's a high degree of needing to understand what you're doing in order to put the warp on and then have it behave like you want it to behave. And I have crazy salvages, you know, going up the side that, you know, are not being woven. And then there's a picture on my Instagram that is before I have that picture with the pinks and the blue with the clasp weft. And it's a picture where I'm pretty much just weaving it as it is there. You know, I'm weaving, I think it's like a straight draw, and then I go into a point twill. And so you're seeing the pattern as it's coming out. And it's pretty. It's a pretty pattern. It's nice bands of color. And Ms. Ann, I tell you, I was so unhappy. I was so unhappy because I would get lost and I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to be and I would lose my count. And I was like, this is not me. Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I doing, I don't even do this. This is supposed to be fun. And I said, you know, forget this. And I started to weave. I wove plain weave between that section. And then I'm just like, you know what? Let's do some clasp weft over top of this thing. Let's see how that would look. Ooh, that looks pretty cool. Let's keep it up. And I was still able to do the point twill and the straight draw and, you know, plain weave between those things. But it was more visually appealing and it was more enjoyable for me personally to weave when I started to break out of the box and stop trying to weave it right. And I'm doing the scare quotes for the podcast listeners with my fingers. I'm doing the weave it right, because what is right? Right for me was the second thing I wove. The first thing was not right for me. Now for others, you know, that might be right for them. They may be excited just to be able to do the technique on a rigid heddle loom and execute it. But I don't particularly enjoy weaving plain fabric. There will be mistakes in my fabric, and it may or may not be on purpose. Most likely it's probably on purpose, but you know, it would be in quotes, maybe a mistake, because I enjoy the hand. I enjoy the fact that I made it, and I want someone to look at it and say, someone made that. I don't want anyone to be confused that was bought from the store and that some machine made it. No, a machine cannot do the things that I'm doing. And I like for people to know that. Yes.
You know, I'm curious. I think we've mostly gotten over this, the idea that people move up, they're my air quotes, they move up to a floor loom. So I'm not suggesting that at all. But have you woven on a multi-shaft loom?
No, I used to have a two-shaft floor loom. But when I realized that a rigid heddle is pretty much a two-shaft loom, not really, but sort of, you have an active shaft and the passive slots. But when I realized that, I'm like, why am I killing myself trying to warp this thing? Why am I fighting with this thing? Yeah, let me just sell this thing and get myself some more rigid heddle looms, which is what I did. I sold the loom and I got more rigid heddle looms. But no, I've never owned a four-shaft table or floor loom. Everything I know about four-shaft weaving has come from a lot of research, a lot of reading books, a lot of, you know, looking at classes for four-shaft weaving and then going through all that's available for four shaft weaving on rigid heddle looms and trying to find the best of all that's out there and bring it all together into something that makes sense to me. And I try to help make sense to other people.
I was curious, you mentioned Liz Gibson earlier, who, you know, used to be an editor on the Handwoven team and worked certainly on multi-shaft looms for a long time and has gotten rid of all those just as you did and really, you know, loves the rigid heddle. Although you have such an interest in even different weaving types of looms within the restriction of just one up, one down, because you're doing some band weaving. You know, you said you were working on frame looms and rigid heddle looms.
Yeah, I think, and that's why I tell people, like, I have my flavor and Liz has her flavor. And then, you know, there's Kelly Casanova who teaches weaving out, but everyone has their flavor of what they like to do. And I can say that I've been inspired. I have, I think, most, if not all of Liz's books and, you know, on how to weave and such like that. And, you know, I find that everyone has their place. And I just feel like in this world, there needs to be more of us. You know, you shouldn't be able to list the people who are rigid heddle weaving teachers on one hand. You know, there needs to be more of us. There needs to be more people putting the information out there. I look at crochet, I look at knitting, and I see that in the last however many years, there's been a real resurgence, especially with crochet coming into its own and finding a place that crochet used to be the redheaded stepchild to knitting for a long, long time. I know I'm a crochet. I used to be a crocheter. And, you know, people were like, oh, you should knit. And I'm like, no, I don't want to. But now you're seeing people do so many amazing things in crochet. And I can call, you know, a half a dozen or more names of crocheters who are personalities within the world of crochet and who've helped thousands of people learn to crochet through what they're doing. And there isn't that much for us online. You know, there's not that much. And I don't know if it's because, you know, some of the mentalities of floor loom weaving is floated down into the rigid heddle space or something like that. And it's so different. It's weird. And again, I'm grateful that I didn't go through the right processes because I probably would have all those things in my head and I wouldn't be doing the things that I do now. But yeah, I guess I want to walk along the path with Liz and share with people in my way. You know, she has her way of doing it informally, and it's amazing. And I just want to do things in my way and bring in people in various ways, not just the rigid heddle loom, but into weaving in general. And I kind of like rigid heddle looms in particular, but I like all my children. You know, I can't pick I have one favorite, but, you know, don't tell the others.
And, you know, there are other weaving teachers who work on rigid heddle as well. For example, Deborah Jarko and Sarah Bixler work on multi-shaft and rigid heddle, or people who are, you know, working in the Sayori tradition. But this sort of devotion to, you know, rigid heddle or rigid heddle and band looms is pretty exciting. And, you know, you've had these events in person, but you've also been, when you can, developing some materials for the web. Is that right?
Yeah. That's another one of my, you know, weirdness. This is crazy. People probably think I'm sort of weird for it, but you have to remember I'm the one who, you know, decided that the world needed the Common Threads loom and I just needed to put it out there just so that people would be able to have it. And it worked out because, you know, people that I'll never meet this side, you know, of heaven or whatever, have been able to use the loom, like literally all around the world. The first person who downloaded the Common Thread loom was in North Africa, if that makes any sense. And that was just like, wow, you know, I didn't see that one. But when COVID hit, I had been doing a lot of in-person classes and I had been doing in-person events. And the reason why, you know, I, like many of us, you always have that idea that you want to have a business. It would be so cool to do what you do, like to have your hobby be your business. I was so excited. I mean, I was getting booked for, you know, people's parties and going to different restaurants and events for like charity events. And it was all coming together. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, you're getting that self-actualization of something that you'd been wanting to do all your life and it was working. And then it wasn't. And it took me a minute to try to figure out what am I supposed to do? Because my personality is a very sharing personality. I'm the type of person that I will tell you how to do it. That makes me happy. I was sharing, like freely sharing before I started doing my weaving events, before I started the fabric of the community. You know, I was just learning and sharing and learning and sharing because I didn't find anybody doing that much, like really giving people step-by-step understanding of how to do it. And I didn't really want to, in quotes, monetize my online audience because I really enjoy sharing. I don't want to have to think, do I share this? Because if I share this, then I can't do my workshop about this over here. And so let me tell them half of what they're supposed to know how to do. And then they'll pay me to tell them the other half in the workshop. I didn't want to mess with that. You know, I know some people are better at that. That's just not my personality. I didn't enjoy that. That being said, when COVID hit, you know, when I finally was able to get out of the haze of being freaked out about COVID and, you know, remembered that I actually do like weaving. This is after, by the way, I sold all of my looms that I was using for my classes. So at one point, it just looked like we were never going to open the world up again. And so I sold all my looms. I sold every single one of them. And then someone had given me a floor loom. I said, you know what? People are going to be stuck in their house. Let this floor loom go to someone who will actually use it. And I gave the floor loom away. Since it was given to me, I gave it away. And so I was just, when I finally got out of this feeling that, okay, maybe people do want to do something. And I believe that if I probably didn't have a day job that consumed me, I probably would have pivoted quicker and whatever. And so I joined this program that taught you how to, you know, build online things and whatever. And they said you needed to make a course. And even though that was so outside of what I do, you know, I'm like, okay, fine, I'll be obedient. Let me do what they said. And I made this course. And Ms. Ann, it was like, it was epic. In fact, it was called the Epically Creative Weaving Course. And it has like 80 something videos. There are PowerPoints and over my shoulder videos. There are guides that go through everything with checklists so that you can go through everything. And I did a launch and I didn't have anything. And I had people join my membership and the course was coming. And I put out the course and I was able to put it all together and it was out there. And, you know, it was really cool. People were learning in my membership, but it was only a few people. And I found that that was putting a governor on me. I stopped posting on social media. I stopped posting YouTube videos. And it got to the point where my husband's like, Amy, you're not really enjoying this anymore, are you? And I'm like, nah, not really. And so I really had to fight with myself because there was the part of me that I felt like, okay, I have to keep everything behind wraps because I have a membership. I have this course, you know, I have to be quiet about these things I would normally be telling people about, you know, like, and the thing that came to a head was a few months ago, I did a course on how to create a wrap and it was a multifunctional wrap. And the thing that made that wrap so special was that it has buttonholes. Now, I know as weavers, when you think, oh, buttonholes, you're talking about space between the warp. No, I'm not talking about leaving big spaces between the warp so that you can put buttons through them. No, my mother and my grandmother were both seamstresses, and I understand hand buttonholes. I'm talking a buttonhole. And when I figured out how to make a functional, very nice looking buttonhole that's very durable, and then I turned it into this wrap, it was one of those skills and techniques. I'm like, wow, this is something everybody should know how to do. And then I put it into the thing. And I think that some people actually joined that workshop even more so for the buttonholes than they did for the wrap, because some people didn't even make the wrap. They just wanted to know how to make the buttonholes for their own devices of stuff. And that needled me. It needled me. And I'm like, you know, I shouldn't be hiding this. There are other people that would be benefited by knowing how to do this. And I've got this behind a paywall. It was so not me. And that was what was just like, okay, I can't do this anymore. And so, and then the other thing was, is that my membership is a closed membership. So it opens and then I close the doors so that I can love on the people and really, you know, get to know the people who are in my membership and really understand their needs and be able to help them since this is an online thing. You know, if it's like a swinging door, you can't really know people because they're just going and coming. But the first group of people that joined, the first and the second group, because I've had three launches so far, they had the option of joining for a year. And so when you join something for a year, you're more able to consume it as you want to. You don't feel that pressure that you have to get everything you want or decide whether it's for you in that month. You know what I'm saying? Because it's month to month. And so in January, I gave the option of just the month to month subscription without the year. And it was a combination between the Buttonhole Workshop. And then when I did that launch, there were a lot of people who joined and they didn't participate in the community. They didn't come to a virtual office hours. They just came for the information. When people join, I actually give them the opportunity and I'll sit and talk with you for a little while on the telephone to get to know each and every member individually, because I'm a human. You're a human. You know, yes, we can't be together anymore. But even because this is an online community, I don't just want a bunch of people that I don't know. I want to know who you are. I want to know what your struggles are. I want to know how I can help you and how I can help you, you know, make the most progress in whatever your journey is and wherever you want to go. And I felt like people were joining for the information. It's not about the information, it's the community. So anywho, I talked to my founding members, the most active founding members that joined me last year when I didn't have anything. And I'm like, y'all, I call them up individually. Like I talked to each and every one of them, those who I could get on the phone. And I shared my heart with them. And I said, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to turn the membership inside out. I want it to be about community. I want it to be about us coming together, about the virtual studio hours, about us getting to know each other, about us sharing our weaving in the supportive space and growing as each of us want to grow. I don't want this just to be about the information, because I believe that this will not only help others that can't join or that don't even know that they should join because they can learn something, but it'll also help you because I'll be more creative to create more things that will help you in the long run. And to a person, they're like, Amy, I don't know. I think you're going to lose. You're giving away too much. But I'm like, I got to do this. And so I pretty much posted all of my content that was behind my paywall onto YouTube. I haven't formally relaunched as yet. I'm still working on building the community part and getting that part solid before I open back up the doors. But I just wanted to make sure that when people join my community, they're joining it for the community and not for the information. But also, I believe that there's thousands more people who will never join my community who will be benefited and blessed by understanding these concepts. And I'm not the only one. And some people are like, well, you know, what about the other people who are teaching? I'm like, my goodness, Crochet has hundreds of crochet bloggers, hundreds of crochet YouTubers. They're not hurting. The tide lifts all ships. So as people consume my content, there'll be a section of people who will appreciate what I'm doing, but then there'll be a section of people who I'm not their flavor of tea. They need Kelly. They need Liz. They need what they bring to the table. And I actively tell people, listen, and I actually told some of the people who joined my membership and left, I think that you might want to go and look into Liz. I think you might want to go and check out Kelly Casanova. I think they may have more of what you're looking for in where you want to grow. And I really believe with all my heart that by doing this, that we're going to see more rigid heddle weavers because people are going to become more proficient and they're going to understand. And it'll sell more books, it'll sell more looms, it'll sell more tools, it'll do all those things. And it'll be more of an interesting, diverse group of people coming in because the information is there.
Yeah, sometimes it is kind of scary to be so generous. When we first started publishing articles on the web, we thought, oh, what if nobody buys the magazine because we've put it on the web? And then somebody pointed out, well, if they don't know what's in the magazine, they'll never buy it anyway. So Nice. It's a... being able to introduce people to what you do helps people find everything else that you're offering, whether it's a business thing or an inspiration.
Definitely. And I feel like, you know, it's all good. I guess I'm a young weaver in relative terms. I hear so many of the podcasts that people started their weaving journey when they were my age. And whereas I used to feel like, wow, I just turned 40 last year. No, 42 years ago. So this is 42. 42 is this September. And I'm like, man, you know, I didn't really find my thing. But the cool thing about the weaving world, it seems like a lot of people find their weaving thing in their 40s. And then they go on to have a second career in weaving. So yeah, the best is yet to come. So I'm super excited about that. And I guess that's the thing I told my members, y'all, I'm just getting started. This is just the beginning of what I want to put out. So y'all will be fine. There's more stuff coming that's going to be even better than the stuff that I put out. Don't worry about it.
You know, everything you're saying reminds me of something that you told me about, a new title that you're giving yourself. You're a weaving inspirational.
Yeah, motivational, inspirational weaver. I realized that that's a big part of what I do too. And it was a big part, I think, of what I was doing before COVID. And I'm hoping to go back into doing it, which is just like not only putting out pictures of, you know, weaving, but like encouraging people that you can do it. I see rigid heddle weaving, especially the higher skills that you can learn, as kind of like a metaphor for life. You know, you got to keep pushing. You have to keep trying. Don't give up on it. You're going to encounter things. You may have to cut things off. You have to try it again, but just keep going. And I really find that for me, that push that made me, you know, was able to help me to learn how to double weave first. And then the push that helped me to understand four shaft weaving and pickup and all those other things. Those are life skills that, you know, the determination, perseverance, and whatever. And I always wanted to climb Mount Everest. You know, I thought that would be cool. Not for real. I don't necessarily want to be falling off the back of a, you know, hanging by a thread off of the, or trusting someone else's fiber that I'm going to stay on the mountain. But theoretically, I always wanted to do something cool, you know, and I always thought it would be neat to be someone that had done something that could go and then do presentations and motivate people to do something through some amazing thing that they did. And I realized that by breaking boundaries and pushing people in this world, by doing things on, you know, pin looms and frame looms and rigid heddle looms that aren't supposed to be done, in some ways it can help motivate people to try. It can motivate people to appreciate what they have, because no matter what type of loom you have, you can do something amazing. And I did a challenge last year. It was called the Creative Cloth Challenge. It was like a 5-day challenge for people to do creative weaving, you know, during this 5-day challenge. And one of the days was believe in the power of your loom. And I was telling them that no matter what type of loom you have, whether you have, you know, the most basic Becca, or you have the Shack Cricut, or you have, you know, an Ashford, or whatever one you have, you can do it. Don't let your loom be the governor of your creativity. Don't say, because I have, that's why one of the first looms that I did double weave on after I learned double weave, I learned it on an Ashford samplet. And then I bought a Cricut to do it on the Cricut, because they say you can't do it on a Cricut because a Cricut isn't made for two heddles. But I said, you know what? If I can figure out how to do it on a Cricut, not only will that solidify the fact that I know how to do it, but all the Cricut users will feel empowered that, yeah, maybe I don't want to do it on a Cricut, but you know what? I can. It's not like I can't do it, you know? And some people don't have the extra means to go out and buy a whole lot of different looms. And so I feel it makes me happy to be able to empower them to be able to do something more on their loom. And of course, once I did that, when I learned how to weave four shaft on rigid heddle loom, had to get the Cricut, because, you know, if you can do it on a Cricut, then you can do it on any loom. And honestly, I actually started out with the basic Becca loom, doing the four shaft weaving, which is like super bare bones, because it's like, I think that as you can help people break down barriers in one area of their life, it can help them to break down barriers in other areas of their life. So when you can stop limiting yourself and saying, and you can see that, oh, I don't have to be limited by this thing. Maybe the next time you're thinking about something else in another area, you can realize, maybe I don't have to be limited in this thing either.
But it also makes me think about how you can use your strengths in different ways. Because I was just thinking about how you said certain looms are better or easier than others. And one of the things that's the strength of the Cricut is that you don't have a whole lot of loom waste and you don't have a whole lot of space. So you can take this tool that has limitations in some ways and a lot of strengths in others, and your creativity, and come up with, you know, something that you didn't even think was possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like all looms have their strengths, you know, but I feel like as with many things, people focus on the weaknesses of what they can't do as opposed to the strengths of what they can, you know, and it was so funny. I had people that were in the challenge. They're like, wow, you know, I appreciate my XYZ loom. You know, I thought I need to go buy this other loom to do this. But now I realize that I can do this on whatever loom it is that you have. And that's why I have Cricuts, Beccas, Ashford, Inkle looms. I think I need to get some more different rigid held looms so I'd be able to help all the different people that have them. But I feel that's a pretty decent spanse of different looms to have. You know, and I have multiples of all of them because sometimes one's tied up with something else. But, you know, I love them all. I love my Becca because it's very portable and it's bare bones. And you can get stuff done on it. You know, I like my Ashford for double weave, and it's also pretty cool for doing the multi-shaft weaving. And my Cricut, like you said, is very compact, and I can get things done, and I can weave all the way to the end of my warp. So there's very little loom waste. So, you know, these are all paintbrushes. These are all tools in our toolbox. And some people have more tools than others, but I've seen amazing artists that can do something out of this world with a single graphite pencil that I can't do. And so, yes, you know, no matter if you have a bunch of looms like I do, great. If you only have one loom, that's great too, because you can still be creative with whatever it is that you have.
So what is your favorite piece of advice to give somebody who's sitting down at a loom for the first time?
Don't take it too seriously. Have fun. Just have fun. In fact, warp, 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 weave and warp, weave and warp. Just weave. Just weave. Don't even worry about making anything. We always want to, you know, we think so long. And because of the nature of rigid head weaving and weaving in general, you have to plan a bit because you have to decide what you're going to put on the loom to do the math and all the other stuff. For a new person starting out, get a black warp. Just pick some black thread and just put it on your warp. Warp a crazy long warp. If you're brand new, don't do the crazy long warp because you may not be able to wind it on there and your tension may be crazy. Warp a black warp that you can wind on comfortably. Make it progressively longer as you are more proficient at it. And just tell yourself, I'm weaving wall hangings. I'm weaving something fun. I'm going to give these away for Christmas gifts or whatever. And just weave. When I got my first rigid head loom, it was an Ashford Samplet 10. And I live in Lexington, North Carolina. I drove to Greensboro, North Carolina at the end of a long day's work. We went straight up there about 45 minutes. And so it was like 6-7 o'clock when we got there, got the loom. You know, I took selfies with the lady, looked at her yarn shop as my husband is waiting in the car with our daughter. And it's like, what is she doing in there? But I mean, I'm at a yarn shop. My goodness, I can't just go and come and put in the world of heathens. So I did all that stuff. And then I get home and I put the loom together and warp the loom the same night. And I almost set it afire because in the directions they say that you can use candle wax, and I used candle wax and it was too thick. And so I got my husband's hot air gun to try to melt the candle wax, and the loom started to burn. I'm like, oh my goodness, I just spent all this money and I'm going to burn my loom up. So anywho, after I put out the fire on my little samplet, I warp it up, and every single day for about a month almost, maybe not the weekends, I warped my loom when I got home, and because I wove all day long, and then I got home and I warped it, and I wove, and I warped it, and I wove, and I warped it, and I wove. And there is a muscle memory that's created by warping it and doing it consistently time and time again. The thing is that the weaving is fun. You have to get to the point where you enjoy the warping, or you go through the warping, because you cannot weave unless you're warped, and you have to be proficient at getting good tension and being able to do it in a way that doesn't take you all day. Learn to warp by yourself. That's another thing that's important. You don't be dependent on having someone else to warp your loom. I have videos out there. There are a lot of different videos of different ways to warp by yourself, but learn to warp by yourself, because you don't want to be dependent on your significant other or your kids to help you when you want to weave something. And then just weave and weave and weave, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to make ugly stuff, and you're going to make stuff that nobody wants. And that is okay, because once you get over the hump, once you get past that ugly stage, you're going to be able to do whatever you want.
So your black warp, is that cotton or wool?
whatever you want. If you have wool in your stash, use wool. If you have cotton in your stash, use cotton. Use what you have in your stash. If you have acrylic in your stash, use acrylic, whatever makes you happy. The important point is that, you know, we all have our little black dress that we accessorize with everything. Don't put a white warp on there, because just like we don't wear white after Labor Day and we don't want to mix and match white shoes, you know, the black will match with whatever, the white won't. So put on a black, a navy, a dark colored warp that will be able to work with whatever yarn you have. And then that way you can play with your different types of yarns within the same, you know, fiber family, and you'll have something pleasing on the other end. Don't worry about doing stripes, doing, you know, houndstooth and all these other things unless you really want to. But when you're starting out, the most important thing for you to do is to weave and to learn how to warp and to be proficient at that. And once you get that proficiency, you're off to the races.
I would love to warp by myself. Unfortunately, my little four-legged cat friends enjoy helping me. And so they like to bite the yarn.
I know you have a warp board. You have a warping board, Ms. N, yes?
Oh, I do, but I really like direct warping my rigid heddle loom.
Yeah, you got to go. I have several videos, and even more so now because I put the content out there, on a hybrid direct warp using the warping board, which you can do. I have two 4.5 warping boards, and that's how I was able to put a 9-yard warp on my looms when I was teaching classes. And pretty much you do the same thing that you would do with a direct warp, but you put the warping board in front of your loom and secure the warping board to your table and secure your loom to your table. And you just do the path just like you would normally do. Beautiful for cats and kids, because just cover that thing up and they cannot disturb anything. Whereas when you have that thing stretched down your hallway, you will make your significant other unhappy, especially if you are, you know, keeping them away from the bathroom. And also your warp's going to sag in the middle. So, you know, there are so many reasons to do a hybrid warp. I don't mind indirect warping. I have two sessions of 10 people that are going to be coming on Sunday to do the band weaving. And I have 20 heddles to indirect warp for my class. And so I don't mind indirect warping. And it's fun. I think it's a useful thing for rigid heddle weavers to learn how to do. But I appreciate the fact that most people don't want to do that. And so when you do a direct warp with a warping board, you get the best of both worlds. You get the length of using a warping board, but you also get being able to have it in a, not have to worry about going back. And after you've done, touch the yarn, have to touch it again to put it through the slots in the hole. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the rigid heddle loom to begin with. And then the other thing is that once you do that, you just have to remember to tie your warp off, just like you would do if you were indirect warping. And then if you have a, you know, you can do it on any loom. I do it on all my looms, and there are different ways to do it on each loom. But yeah, once you learn that, you're golden. The world is a happy place. And no matter how many cats or kids, as long as you can keep them out long enough to wind the thing on, you're good. I have kids. I used to have cats.
And it would also solve the problem of, you know, after a little while, the loom starts walking closer and closer to the peg.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I did that. It's so funny. It was my own convenience, but also I saw all the contraptions that people come up with in order to warp their loom. And I'm like, oh my goodness, there has to be a better way. There has to be some other way. And it actually, I think the first time I did it on the loom that has the warp on the bottom. So I think it was like an ashfur, because ashfurs have the warping board on the bottom. And you can even do that if you have I actually have a video on that. And so you're warping the heddle, and then you warp the heddle, and you use like clamps, like the little spring clamps, like the big clothespins to hold it in place. You put the warping peg behind the heddle and the warping board in front of the heddle. You do your direct warp. And then you take your heddle to the loom. You're going to have to tie or lash that heddle onto the back beam, and you might as well thread the slots while you're at it, save yourself some time, and then wind it on. But it's all good. You know, that is a way to do it. And I have all these things. They're all free for the listener to go look and look on YouTube and see exactly what I'm talking about. So if it doesn't make sense to what I'm saying.
So where do people find this on YouTube?
My name Amy D. McKnight. Make sure you put that D in there because there's another Amy McKnight. And she's a creator too. She's actually a musician, but I am Amy D. McKnight. Yes.
And the only A is the one in Amy, right? MC Knight?
MCKNIGHT. Mm-hmm. No A in the Mac.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for spending this time with me and for your generosity in getting your weaving knowledge and inspiration into the world.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed talking with you. I really did.
Thank you for listening to the Long Thread Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate the show and leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. Thanks again.